The Supreme Court of Ohio was founded in 1802, established in the state constitution as a three-member court, holding courts in each county every year. The constitution was also approved that year, 1 year before Ohio officially became a state. The court now has 7 members, a chief justice and 6 associate justices, each serving 6-year terms, and a total of over 1,500 other employees. This hour, meet 2 of the justices, Judy French and Sharon Kennedy, and learn about Ohio's judicial structure and other functions of the highest court in the state.
From the Ohio Farm Bureau Studio, this is our Ohio Weekly, highlighting those who grow our food, fiber, and fuel, while examining issues that are important for farmers and their neighbors throughout the Buckeye State. Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, with this week's news feed, here's our Ohio Weekly host, Ty Higgins.
Dairy producers, you probably already know this, but just in case, the sign-up period for the Agriculture Department's Dairy Margin Coverage Program for next year has just begun. Richard Fordyce runs the USDA Farm Service Agency. He says over 13,000 producers signed up for the 2020 DMC program.
It wasn't as high a sign-up as we had in 2019.
Almost half the number of producers that signed up for the 2019 version.
I thought there would be more.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue expressing surprise and disappointment last year when the 2020 sign-up numbers were announced, telling reporters,
I don't know whether farmers are still thinking about the old program or not. This is a totally new program. It's a much better risk management tool for dairymen, and I frankly can't understand anyone, certainly anyone that's producing less than 5 million pounds of milk, not participating in this program.
Last year, when sign-up was going on, many analysts were predicting that the way milk prices and feed prices were going, that margins between the two would not trigger any payments under the program. So why sign up? But as USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Jekinowski says,
the dairy market is a tough one to predict these days.
Mr. Fordyce agrees with that. He says even without the COVID-19 disaster,
it's very difficult to predict, obviously, what feed prices are going to do, what milk prices are going to do. And I think we saw that, you know, with the unexpected development of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Because indeed, those producers that were in the 2020 program did see payments totaling $7 million in March, $77 million in April, and $92 million in May. So Fordyce hopes producers will give another look at the 2021 Dairy Margin Coverage Program.
We anticipate certainly lots of dairy farms taking a look at it and certainly hopefully signing up, because we do believe that it's a great tool, again, to provide some risk management coverage for dairy operations.
There is a new enhanced online tool to help farmers decide as well.
Producers will be able to put their information, their own unique farms production information, through the tool to make a good decision.
That new tool can be found at farmers.gov. Again, that's farmers.gov. Since 2013, Judy French has served as a justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. Before that, she served as a judge on the 10th District Court of Appeals in Ohio. As an attorney, Justice French argued 2 cases before the U.S. Supreme Court and also argued before other federal and state courts. In 2015, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Chief John Roberts appointed her to serve on the Federal Appellate Rules Committee. Since being elected to the Supreme Court of Ohio in 2014, Sharon Kennedy's work has gone beyond the bench, launching and sustaining the initiative Lean Forward, advancing veterans' treatment courts across Ohio. Justices French and Kennedy join us this week on our Ohio Weekly.
Well, good morning.
Justice French, I want to start with you. I gave a short bio, but tell us more about yourself. And I know that on your time there at the Supreme Court, you've seen Ohio Farm Bureau come across your desk a time or two.
You know, the Ohio Farm Bureau is one of our frequent participants. We have what we call amicus curiae, friends of the court, a friend of the court. It just, you know, we like to speak Latin sometimes as lawyers. But it's your opportunity as an organization, even when you aren't involved as a party in a case, it's your opportunity to tell us your perspective. If we're hearing a property rights case, if we're hearing an oil and gas case, whatever it might be, the Ohio Farm Bureau is in there telling us, here's how this is going to impact us. And that is critically important. I know it's not free. I know it doesn't come easily. And I appreciate all of you that are taking part in that effort. I'll give just a very brief background. I grew up in small town Ohio in Northeast Ohio. My mom was a school teacher. My dad owned a small business, and I worked at McDonald's. and high school. I went to Ohio State from there, and more than 30 years ago, I got my law degree. So I've had experience in private practice, in a corporation, for a state agency, working for Betty Montgomery when she was the Attorney General. I served as one of her assistant attorneys general and later as chief legal counsel, then the governor's office, and then to the bench. So in my 15 years as a judge, I haven't forgotten what I wanted when I was a lawyer. And what I wanted as a lawyer is predictability. You know, somebody who's going to be accountable, somebody who's going to be consistent and predictable and stable in their rulings.
Justice Kennedy, I mentioned everything on your resume, and it is quite impressive as well as you made your way to the Ohio Supreme Court. Really, though, when you got to that bench, it kind of all came full circle.
Coming to the Supreme Court of Ohio was like going back home for me. You know, for 14 years as a trial court bench, I looked at the law monochromatic, one small area of law. But coming to the Supreme Court was like going home to private practice, because there I touch people's lives, whether it was a fence line dispute, whether it was a domestic relations court case, a juvenile case, or a criminal case. I touch the lives of my families that came to me to ask for help every single day. And that Lean Forward initiative, having traveled to more than 62 counties, speaking to more than 100 judges, partnering with the Ohio State Bar Association, the Attorney General's Office, the American Legion Department of Ohio, and American Veterans Department of Ohio to provide continuing legal education, training individuals, traveling to all the VAs across Ohio, being in the veterans' homes for events. That is the other part of serving as a justice that can't be replaced. Being able to move education forward, making sure that we're finding veterans in our justice system and we're making sure that they get treatment instead of incarceration when it's possible. Everyone is held accountable for their actions. But when we're going to do community control and we have services available for substance abuse, mental health, we should be getting them in treatment and through the VA as a result of their time and service to us.
We have the privilege of visiting with Justices French and Kennedy, two members of Ohio Supreme Court this week on Our Ohio Weekly. And of course, you serve on the highest court in the state. But let's talk about the state's judicial structure. And Justice French, I'll give this one to you. Kind of give us an overview of what the system looks like across the Buckeye State.
Yeah, happy to do it. You know, we have in general a three-level system of the judiciary. So we have the trial court level where most cases start, and then the Court of Appeals level, and then the Supreme Court of Ohio. And I speak to a lot of civic organizations, and I always like to start out with a question to them of just if you had to guess how many cases get filed at that trial court level every year, what would be the guess? And I won't ask for answers now, but if you had to guess how many cases get filed at that trial court level every year in the state of Ohio, we have 11.5 million people, more than 3 million cases get filed at the trial court level. Now, many of those cases are traffic cases, but even if you take those out, we're at it, more than a million cases getting filed at that trial court level. So that statistic alone tells you just how important those trial court judges are in terms of the volume of cases that they hear. And when you have a case in that trial court level, you're going to have one judge controlling the proceedings, the judge duties. I get that sometimes. The judge duties of the world controlling the proceedings. And let's say you're unhappy with the result that you got. You're involved in one of those cases and you're unhappy with the result that you got. In the state of Ohio, you have the right to take your case to one of our 12 district courts of appeals where your case will be heard by three judges. And they don't take new evidence, they don't hear testimony, but if you can convince at least two of them that the lower court did something wrong based on the record that's in front of them, you could get that lower court modified, lower court decision modified or changed in some way. Remember, we started at over a million cases at the trial court level, only about 8,000 end up at the courts of appeals. So again, you really see that volume at the trial court level. But let's say you're unhappy, you're still unhappy at the Court of Appeals. You didn't get the result that you wanted. You don't necessarily have the right to have your case heard by the Supreme Court of Ohio. So part of our job is deciding what cases we want to decide. So if you get four of us, four of the seven justices to say, this is a question of great public or general interest, then we could then hear that case. And the Ohio Farm Bureau is sometimes in at that stage too, saying, this is an important case. This isn't just about two property owners, but it's an important case for anybody, all of our Farm Bureau members. And that's a really important part of the process. So I appreciate you being in there and being part of that process, even in the early stages.
And Justice Kennedy, there are other functions of the Supreme Court besides just sitting on the bench in Columbus?
So what I would start with, thank you for the question, is recognizing how different Ohio is from other states. So if you looked at that tiered court system, as Judy described, you would find that we have 88 independent bodies. So whether that's a municipal court, county court, a court of common pleas, and all of the divisions there, or one of the 12 appellate courts across Ohio, Ohio is not a unified court system where there is a figurehead who sits over the entire judicial structure and therefore can enforce policy or create it, collapse, create courts in their own right. Our system, based on our constitution and based on the statutory scheme, it is independent. The General Assembly creates new courts as are necessary under the Ohio Constitution. So every county has their own unique system. So as the Supreme Court of Ohio, there is a functional role under the Ohio Constitution where we have the ability to make rules and procedures. And those rules then go to the General Assembly. And when they are passed upon by the General Assembly, they basically have the force of law. So as you look at the civil rules, the appellate rules, the criminal rules, all of those rule functions or rulemaking functions that happen at the Supreme Court, while they go to the General Assembly, they have the force of law. And that's important because those rules are what help all of the 724 judges across Ohio know what the rules are and how to proceed with their case. Imagine, if you would, that we didn't have those rules and 724 judges could do what they wanted. You would utterly have what we had in the beginning, which is why we changed that system under the Modern Courts Amendment, because nobody really had collective control over what the courts were doing. So every single one of those rules and procedures helps the law become stable and predictable, because everybody knows how a case can flow. Everybody knows what rules are going to apply. Therefore, everybody has the same access to the court system and has the same ability to have their case tried.
More with Ohio Supreme Court Justices Judy French and Sharon Kennedy after this on Our Ohio Weekly.
Are you a small business owner supporting agriculture, such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, and a variety of plans designed to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit OFBHealthBenefitsPlan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's OFBHealthBenefitsPlan.org. OFBHealthBenefitsPlan.org.
Here in Ohio, we grow possibilities. By investing in the Soybean Checkoff, farmers can concentrate on running their operations, while the Ohio Soybean Council creates new opportunities for future generations. The Soybean Checkoff works to get new soy-based products on the market, builds relationships with international buyers, and partners with researchers to increase yield and on-farm profitability. Learn more at soyohio.org/herewegrow. This message brought to you by Ohio Soybean Farmers and their Checkoff.
Fran, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Stick around. Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues following these messages.
You're listening to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins, and this week, visiting with two Ohio Supreme Court justices, Judy French and Sharon Kennedy. Of course, 2020 has brought challenges to every aspect of our life. I have to imagine every aspect of our state judicial system as well. Justice Kennedy, many might wonder if the courts are still functioning. Are they?
They are. The Ohio Judicial Conference, which is led by the executive director, former Justice Paul Pfeiffer, the judges across Ohio have banded together. They're teaching one another the best strategies and how to move forward in this current environment, making sure that cases are being tried before juries, making sure that cases, whether they happen in juvenile courts or family courts, are moving forward, because the most important thing is that our courthouse doors remain open, that you, each and every one of you, have access to the court system to resolve controversies, to get assistance. Now more than ever, I think people see the necessity and why it's so important that we have the judiciary. Because in the end, the controversies that face you, face your families, they're ending up in the courts across Ohio. And those big issues that the Farm Bureau champions, if it is in a case, that our doors remain open so you can have those cases heard timely, responsibly.
What is the biggest issue facing Ohio's judiciary system? Justice Kennedy.
I think the biggest issue facing the judiciary is moving forward with the ever-changing challenges that are facing all Ohioans. I said it earlier, or I alluded to it, that judges across Ohio have been finding new ways to do the business to keep the courthouse open. And I think it's under-recognized how much they are doing. Whether I take you to Dart County and you see Judge Hine over there, who's now holding jury trials in the high school, or I take you to Champaign County and Judge Salvaggio is using the county, what I call administrative building, where there is a large space in order to help people feel safe and comfortable, but honor their civic obligation. I think the challenges coming forward is I can see where we're going in an economy, staving off what I call the financial cliff.
as the economy continues to sputter, as people are unable to return to work fully, there is going to come an avalanche of cases on the judiciary. House Bill 196 actually stayed some cases. For a lot of people, they believe that they were staying all cases. If you read the legislation, you found out quickly that they weren't. They only stayed time on those cases that would expire during March 11th through the end of July. There is no movement in the General Assembly to do another piece of legislation to now set another expiration. They don't want to do that because people need to get their controversies into the courtroom. But those avalanche of cases, they will be challenging to get through. There will be many to get through. But I really believe that the judiciary, working with the Ohio Judicial Conference, that they are doing everything they can to meet today's challenges for today and tomorrow. They have shared strategies. They have held webinars. They have discussed across the state. You know, the gift of this technology, it allows judges to get online and converse with everyone. You don't have to get in a car and drive to Columbus anymore. And that exchange of information is going to help them actually meet these challenges. So currently, I think the challenges for Ohio judiciary is the ever-changing challenges that you are going to face in your own lives. And they're just going to do it on a broader scale because they touch so many of our lives by the work that they do.
And Justice French, your thoughts on today's challenges facing the judiciary?
Yeah, I have to agree with Sharon. I think right now what the courts are doing are, you know, they are meeting the needs of the public and meeting that docket in new and different ways. What I love about what's happening right now is how innovative those changes are. And Sharon mentioned, you know, doing a lot of things that people no longer have to travel for. And that's happening in courtrooms as well. So in some courtrooms, you're going to see people in a jury box with plexiglass in between each of the jurors and plexiglass around the witnesses or the witness and around the judge and lawyers wearing masks. I mean, I think innovation is really what's happening around Ohio. And I'm just really proud of the way that courts have handled those needs. And I think, you know, even though that is the most immediate need facing the courts and judges all around Ohio, remember, though, that they've still got all of the other issues that they were facing before, the long-term impacts of drug addiction and drug epidemic. You know, they're still having to deal with those kinds of issues and the criminality that results from that, the need for addiction services. All of those issues are still very present, and they just have to meet that need at the same time that they're trying to be innovative and adaptive and also protecting the public. So kudos to those local judges out there who are still, the courthouse is still open, but they're doing everything they can to meet the needs of the public in really creative and innovative ways.
That's Ohio Supreme Court Justice Judy French, along with Justice Sharon Kennedy, our guest this week on Our Ohio Weekly. Coming up later this hour, Sonny Perdue. He's the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He met virtually with Farm Bureau leaders across the state earlier this week. His thoughts on the current state of affairs in agriculture in just a bit as Our Ohio Weekly continues. I'm Ty Higgins. This is Our Ohio Weekly. Welcome back. A Butler County high school teacher planted a seed in his students' minds. That seed has grown into Ghee Foods, an organization run by just over a dozen teens in Ross, Ohio. Their primary function is to rescue food that would otherwise be discarded. So let's get to know two members of Ghee Foods on this week's segment of To the Beat of Agriculture.
My name is Mike Rivera. My hometown is in Butler County, Ohio. First and foremost, a student, someone that likes to give back to the community, very involved with community outreach and making sure that those that are underserved definitely have the ability to to have all the opportunities that I've been afforded.
My name is Brett Eads. I'm from Ross, Ohio, within Butler County, and I would say that I am an innovator. The way I think of myself as an innovator is there's a lot of problems out there in today's society, and I think that as a student, as a community member, it's our job to go out there and change the problems we see within our society. And for me, entrepreneurship was really the way that I did that.
G Food stands for Jobs, Education, and Economy. It's just pronounced G, spelled J-E-E. And what we do, we act as a food service nonprofit. So we work with local farms, local restaurants, local grocery stores, collect food that they'd otherwise discard. So let's say maybe tomatoes or corn that were left behind from a harvest, restaurant overordered, and then grocery stores too, specifically dirty produce or ugly produce, you know, maybe a bruised apple or a slightly blemished banana. Those are the organizations that we primarily work with. And what we do is we collect food from those organizations, bring them back to our donation center based out of the Ross Administration Building, where we have access to a commercial-sized kitchen, process that food as needed. So depending on what product, either flash freeze, vacuum seal, or dehydrate, and then either store it in frozen, ambient, or refrigerated storage.
It started out as, hey, you know, co-founding a nonprofit looks good on college applications. That's what it started as. But I believe the day that changed for me was me, Michael, and a few other members of our organization went to Surf City Food Bank. They're volunteering and walking people through their mini grocery store that they had set up and just listening to the stories of, I got laid off at my job because I got injured at work and I don't have health benefits. I couldn't work, and so they fired me, and now I have no way to buy food for my family. That's why I'm here. And hearing those stories was really what changed it to me. I wanted to make a difference in those people's lives. It's terribly sad. It struck a chord with me, and I knew that I had to do something about it. And so I really credit that man with the drive that I put into G Foods and the reason that I put so many hours into making food deliveries before school, after school, making runs. I really credit him with, he is the reason that I do what I do. We were invited by Samsung America and the United Nations to participate in something called the Global Classroom STEAM Challenge, where basically we were one of 8 schools in the entire world where the United Nations said, hey, here are the problems we see with the world, sustainable development goals, we want you to solve them. And so they tasked us with solving United Nations SDGs 1 and 2, no poverty, zero hunger. We worked for like 16 weeks with a school in South Korea to develop solutions to solve SDGs 1 and 2, and then we presented that solution to the United Nations, a special delegation in New York City. I will say Michael did kind of led our efforts. That's the reason he's the executive director. He led our efforts and led us to the solution, and from the United Nations, he was the one. He was not going to let this go. He was going to take an extra step. We were going to make a difference, and I credit him with that.
Yeah, so the selection process, I think largely one of the main reasons we were selected was, like I'd mentioned, Mr. O'Neill, our IT instructor at Ross. He had been very involved with Samsung Solve for Tomorrow, which is a program that they do for innovative solutions for high school students. And the Global Classroom STEAM Challenge was, at the time, the first year that they'd ever done it, the first and only year for that matter. And just because Mr. O'Neill had been so involved with his classwork in the Samsung Solve for Tomorrow program, they'd considered us a quality candidate for that Global Classroom STEAM Challenge.
Me and Michael are still friends to this day with some of the students that we met in South Korea. We keep up with the issues facing both of our societies, and just, you know, being able to go out and eat lunch with students from other countries and ambassadors from other countries. I know I ate lunch with an ambassador from Uganda, and we talked about an hour about the issues facing my community and the issues facing his country and how they interrelated, and discussed potential solutions to those problems, which is still, even 2 years later, completely shocking, and I will never get over that.
The 501c3 status was granted January of 2018, but I'd say most of 2018 was laying the brickwork for the organization operations starting around August, September of 2018?
So since January of 2019, we've processed, I believe, just over 8 tons of food, affecting nearly 5,000 families, feeding 5,000 families in our area.
Yeah, absolutely. I credit all of, whether it be my business skills or my ability to really grind the wheel that is G Foods to my IT instructor back in high school, Mr. Tom O'Neill, really instilled this drive and passion, and then this mindset that if you want it, you got to go get it. There truly is nothing in life is free. And then if you want to do something, you want to see change, no one's going to do it for you. You have to be the one that drives the change and that makes the impact that you want to have in your community.
It's very exciting to hear those students firsthand saw an issue and are seeing success in pursuing a solution. If you'd like to learn more, visit geefoods.com. That's spelled J-E-E foods.com. You're listening to Our Ohio Weekly. Back after this.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
For many, the COVID-19 crisis made it feel like the world stopped. But for Ohio Farm Bureau and our members, the work never did. As you spend early mornings in the barn and late nights in the field, Ohio Farm Bureau continues to be at the forefront, advocating and educating to help our members navigate through these challenges. Ohio's resilient agriculture community will get through this with the strength of the state's largest farm organization. Get updates and become a member at ofbf.org/stillfarming. Ohio Farm Bureau, together with farmers.
Ohio Farm Bureau is proud to announce its new partnership with the Ford Motor Company. And it's good news for Farm Bureau members. Members get $500 in bonus cash on eligible new Ford cars and trucks, or $750 in bonus cash on eligible Lincoln vehicles. Not a member? Well, join now and in 30 days, you're eligible. For complete information on program details, visit ofbf.org.
Have you heard about the Ohio Farm Bureau Energy Program? Eligible members are saving an average of 15% on their electric and natural gas bills. The program works through a network of suppliers to secure cost-saving pricing in competitive electric and natural gas regions. We've heard from members who've saved hundreds of dollars annually on their energy costs. Getting started is easy. Simply call the Energy Program customer service line, 800-830-3501, and our representative will assist you from there, 800-830-3501. You can also visit ofbf.org/savings to learn more.
Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues after this.
Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. Earlier this week, Ohio Farm Bureau's state and county leaders were given an opportunity to visit exclusively with USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. Topics covered included trade, dairy pricing, labor, and water quality. OFBF President Frank Burkett expressed his appreciation for programs like the MFPs and the CFAPs to get farmers through trade wars and the COVID-19 pandemic, but he also shared concerns for how sustainable those programs are and how farmers are looking for more steady income from selling to the markets. Secretary Perdue.
I don't know of a good, honest farmer in the United States that rather not have a good crop at a fair price than a government check. But the fact is, when you're not having a profitable year, the government checks come in pretty handy to spend. And that's what President Trump recognized, obviously, with the retaliatory tariffs from China. He was not going to allow the farmers of the U.S. to be held hostage by that. And we've had a lot of transfer payments, more than any time in my history, on MFP1, MFP2, CFAP1, CFAP2, even the ad hoc disaster programs, along with the Farmers to Family Food Box. So there have been a lot of that. Maybe we'll look at a farm income sheet later to kind of show you the impact of that. But the fact is, that's not sustainable. Even though farm income has gone up, as a farmer, you don't feel like it because you're not earning it across the scales, but through the mailbox. And that prices are depressed. And even though you get that deficiency check or the insurance check or whatever, then it just doesn't feel the same. So we understand that. I think the best thing that we can do, again, to continue the trade policies that do appear to be paying off even this fall. Again, I just looked on my phone before I came in. You know, November soybeans at 1071, corn at 414 today. We hadn't seen those in a while, and wheat over $6. That's the real answer. When we talk about sustainability, and we hear a lot about that today, many people want to talk about just the environmental standpoint, and environmental sustainability is critical. But also, food has to be affordable. There's a social sustainability. We have to produce efficiently and effectively so people can afford the food, not here just in the affluent United States, but around the world in that way. But third leg of that stool that many people don't think about, there's got to be economic sustainability. We as a country can't expect that farmers and ranchers to continue their careers at a deficit and an unprofitable position because they have families to feed, kids to educate, and all the other expenses of life going along. So really, prices, trade, living prices is the real answer to what we're doing. And the president, Ambassador Lighthizer, working on the Japan deal, USMCA, but all these things lead to earning that profit across the scales rather than through the mailbox.
Mike Vedekovich, who represents District 15 on Farm Bureau's Board of Trustees and farms in Fairfield County, told Secretary Perdue that he was alarmed by the price differential between what the meatpackers are receiving as compared to what's being seen at the farmer level. He also talked about how USDA might create more competition and more domestic and regional processors across the state and the country. Perdue's response?
You called it a concern or alarm. I call it obscene. The kind of disparity we saw between the retail beef prices and the live cattle prices was more than alarming to me. We called in the processors. They had various excuses during that period of time. And we obviously in the Packers and Stockyards Act did as much as we could from an investigation standpoint. We don't have the same kind of tools from subpoenas and other things that the Department of Justice has. You may be familiar with the Department of Justice has just issued some indictments regarding the poultry industry on that. We are facilitating and assisting them to look at the data over the beef pricing in that way to see what we can. We gave a report to Congress. Much of the things really have to do with statutory changes that we've suggested to them. Secondly, I think your second question really has to do with the more diversity of processing that we can have, which we need more regional processors. We need local packers that can meet the food safety standards where people could do that. I'm suggesting to cattle people today that they form co-ops much like others have formed co-ops in poultry and pork and others in order to take to benefit from those inordinate retail prices that go up, be integrated through that, and take a group of people coming together. It's not as easily to integrate and co-op a beef operation as it is pork or poultry, but it can be done. We're looking at any other kind of flexibility from a regulatory standpoint that we have that may facilitate the ability for local processors to participate. We've already done a few things like helping them with overtime hours and things like that. You also know that the consumer really likes that locally grown product there. So we want to help the consumer have the availability for things that are processed locally.
USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue's thoughts on trade and regulations next on Our Ohio Weekly. A lot of young people don't think they need to worry about estate planning until they're maybe in their 40s or 50s, but anyone who has minor children should have an estate plan in place. Evan Batchelor is an attorney with Wright & Moore, and Evan, I understand someone younger worried about estate planning if they have many assets, but it's just as important if they don't.
Absolutely, Ty. So even if someone doesn't have a lot of assets, the most important thing to them is still their child. So by having an estate plan in place, you can name a guardian who would look after your child in case something happens to you or your spouse. And this is planning for the unexpected. If you do have a lot of assets, having an estate plan in place allows you to make a plan to make sure that the assets are managed for your child in a way that you would want it to be. So the default could mean that if you don't have an estate plan in place, your child would at 18 receive pretty much all of your estate. But a lot of our clients don't like 18-year-olds having a lot of assets all at once. So by having an estate plan in place, you can kind of have a say in how that plan plays out. So you could put restrictions on whether your child gets assets at 21, 25, 30, or however you want it to work out.
Obviously, assets are an important part of any estate plan, but if we're talking about these younger folks with minors, what other things should they be thinking about as they make that succession plan for them?
So some of the other considerations you want to have in coming up with your estate plan is making sure other people know your wishes. So we can prepare all the documents that you need, but when we're talking about guardians or trustees, you also want to talk with those people in advance to make sure that they're on the same page and that they're willing to serve in those roles.
Evan Batchelor is an attorney with Wright & Moore. Visit him online at ohiofarmlaw.com. That's ohiofarmlaw.com. More our Ohio Weekly next.
Are you a small business owner supporting and involved with agriculture such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Then search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, fixed monthly payments, and a variety of plan designs to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
Fran, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
At Georgia Boot, we build our boots just like the people who wear them. Tough, dependable, and hardworking. You need a boot that you can count on. That's why Georgia Boot always uses rich, full-grain leathers and comfort insoles to maximize your all-day comfort. We've been building boots that way since 1937. You pick the best tools for the job. Why would your boots be any different? Georgia Boot is America's hardest-working boot. Go to georgiaboot.com to see our latest promotions or to find a dealer near you.
More of Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins next.
Thank you for listening to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins, replaying a recent call that Ohio Farm Bureau state and county leaders had with Sonny Perdue, secretary at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Rose Hartshoe is the Northwest Regional Trustee with OFBF. She had a chance to ask Perdue about trade. She knows that Japan, China, Canada, Mexico are all great for U.S. ag trade, but are there other options in the future?
I have to go back to the point of thinking what a blessed country we are, that we have to depend on exports for profitability because we're so productive in feeding our own people and much of the world. Think about that. During this whole pandemic, we were not threatened to be dependent on anywhere in the world for food. And that's a real blessing of God, actually, with the productivity and the resilience of our American producers in order to do that. While we're happy over the phase one agreements, we're happy over USMCA, which will help the dairy market globally. And we're happy for the Japan agreement, which will allow us to compete on a level playing field for those 11 other countries. We're proud of the South Korea improvement that got done. We're proud of the Indo-Pacific on what we're doing in Vietnam and the Philippines and Thailand and that. But it's always about the future. That's kind of what Yogi Berra said. The good thing about the future, it's ahead of us. And we're always looking to the next layer. We're in negotiations with the UK as they've broken off from the EU. The EU has been extremely frustrating in their ability to do a trade deal with agriculture. They ship us a lot of cars over here, but they don't take our food products. And in fact, they sort of disparage them in many ways as being a lower standard than their products are. I remind them very much that many Europeans love to visit the U.S. and they come back just as healthy or healthier after eating our food as when they left. But the fact is, we've opened up a free trade discussions and negotiations with Kenya. When you say, well, Kenya's not that big a market, but it is the beachhead into the growing African continent there that is one of the fastest growing people groups in the world that is going to need food like all of us. Their economy has improved. Their purchasing power has improved across the continent of Africa. Much of the reason because of the productivity of American producers and that social sustainability of providing food that's affordable and the technological advances we've had regarding productivity. So it's all about further exports. The good news is we never try to hoard. Our producers are so confident and so competitive and so productive that we get to share with the world. And I believe, frankly, that's been a large component of the fact that we've been able to feed people around the world that puts the U.S. Stature around the globe.
Bill Patterson is Ohio Farm Bureau Federation Vice President. He asked Secretary Perdue about the regulatory front and if he sees EPA putting together more consistent, common sense regulations.
We know many of those things that NRCS helps with, cover crops and no-till and CRP, and all those things have to combine. USDA is finally working with EPA as well as the Corps of Engineers in a one government approach to make these common sense integrated solutions. You don't get one answer from one group and another answer from another group. You may have been in an area where some of the wetland determinations would USDA would make a decision on one, EPA would make another decision, and the Corps of Engineers would make another decision. The president has insisted on a one federal decision about those kind of things. So the interagency operation, I think, will inure to the benefit of producers in doing those common sense things. Obviously, the icon of your question is the waters of the U.S. And we know from a farmer perspective how confiscatory that was and how much problems it would be. While it sounded so innocent, we've seen things like the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act eventually become weaponized against producers in this country. And that was one that was going to be weaponized very, very quickly. So the rescinding of that. I know farmers historically have not had a lot of confidence in the EPA and have had a lot of complaints about them. But I want to tell you, Andrew Wheeler and this EPA have been very agricultural friendly. We still got challenges, that you know, in the Great Lakes over nutrient runoff. And we've all got to work together. I think our government is with us, trying to help us rather than trying to catch us doing something wrong.
That's Sonny Perdue. He is Secretary of USDA. On a recent call with Ohio Farm Bureau leaders from the state and county levels earlier this week.
Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. And produced by Ohio Farm Bureau. Working together for Ohio farmers to advance agriculture and strengthen our communities. Be sure to visit Our Ohio Weekly's podcast page to listen to previous episodes at ofbf.org/Our Ohio Weekly.
I'm Ty Higgins. We'll see you down the road.